But there's a famous story that's told against myself for that, in that context, and that was playing for the Dunvegan Medal in Portree. The first year I played, I thought it was 3 McCrimmon tunes that were required, and it was 4. And I had 3. I had three McCrimmon tunes, and I put them in. I can't remember them now, but anyhow, the late Sheriff Grant, a great and aristocratic judge, said, I'm afraid, he said, it's 4 that are required. So I said, oh, well, you know, as though, you know, can I pick one out of my other 100, you know? I said, oh, doesn't matter, too long in this condition, you see, very small one, which I thought I might be able to stumble through. Well, he said, just play it. So I was, at that time, I had been playing with considerable success. I had been putting in among the tunes Macfarlane's Gathering. In fact, I think I had won the 2 previous Peebra competitions with that tune. And he knew this, and he turned around to his fellow judges and said nothing. He just wrote the tune down, and that was it. Well, you're only a fool if you make the same mistake twice. So the following year, I decided to learn Too Long in This Condition, and I put it in. And again, he was on the bench, and he gave me the same tune. Now, you can take different interpretations of that, you know. But I just said, thank you, and I went round. And as I was turning my back to go away, he turned round to his fellow judge and said, I'm afraid the inevitable will happen. Because the year before, I had broken from Too Long in This Condition into Macfarlane's Gathering. However, to his eternal credit, the inevitable didn't happen, and he gave me the prize, which I thought was very big of him. I don't know that I would have done in similar circumstances. So to go back to lists, the judge has to be careful about this, and I think you have to have complete honesty in this matter, knowing the psychological pressures that are put in people when they are putting in lists. It would be very unfair if you deliberately saw a competitor and whom you felt one should always feel well disposed to all competitors, but human nature being what it is, one has to allow for variations. It would be grossly unfair if you saw one person coming up and you said, oh yes, well, he makes a good job of that tune, we'll give him that one. He makes a bit of a banjax of this one, we'll give him that one, you see? This sort of thing. You try and do it with complete impartiality. The one thing that I try to avoid is giving tunes to competitors when I might feel it wrongly. Because if you put in Mrs. McPherson of Inverurn of the Little Cascade, hell manger, and if you get that tune well and you make up pills of it, that's your fault, you shouldn't have put it in. But on the other hand, I think we have to be charitable and generous. And if you feel that the bagpipe that this person is playing is not going to be suitable for this type of tune, I think you shouldn't give it to them. Quite honestly, I think you should try and save them from their own sins. That's all I have to say in this.
Would you support the judge drawing one of the tunes?
Well, in fact, yes. What we have done in the Scottish Pipers Association. May I just stop for a moment and continue my answer to the last question? Just for a moment. Going round games, you know pipers, and you know what tunes they're good at. Now, just to conclude what I was saying with the last answer, it's manifestly unfair if you know that Cyril Hall has been winning competitions playing Glengarry's March. It's manifestly unfair when he comes up with his list to say, all right, Cyril, you play Glengarry's March. And you heard Eton Shepherd 3 weeks ago playing the Battle of the Pass of Crieff, and he broke down in a third variation and say to him, you play the Battle of the Pass of Crieff. You know what I mean? If you're going to give favourite tunes, and quite often we do this, then you must make sure that you give everyone their favourite and not try and do a piper down by the choice of tune. Now, what we did in the Scottish Pipers Association with considerable success, in fact, is that there are 4 tunes. And they put their lists all, of course, at all most competitions at home, they submit the tunes beforehand, so that the tunes are on a list for the adjudicator, and they're marked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or whatever it happens to be. And what we did is we got four discs, and we put 1 to 4 on the discs, and we turned the discs upside down on the table in front of the adjudicator, and the piper came up, and the adjudicator said to him, just pick a disc. And he picked this one here, which might have been number 3. And he turned it up, and he looked at his list, number 3, yes, that's the lament for the Earl of Antrim, play the Earl of Antrim. So that in one way he was selecting his own tune. This is a very, very fair way. It has one danger, and that is you might get 3 people in succession putting in one tune, you know, that's common to the 3 lists, and they might pick that tune. So that, in fact, you might get the spectators listening to McCrimmon's Sweetheart 3 times from 3 different players. But the chances, I don't know the mathematical chances of this turning up, but, you know, it hasn't actually happened in our competitions, and the competitors feel that, you know, they're getting as fair a crack of the whip as is humanly possible, and they accept it, and the judges don't mind. So that is an alternative.
Getting back to this question of lists, especially for a competition such as we had yesterday, we've got a spectators listening. Do you try and vary the tunes as you considering these spectators?
Well, I consider myself as a spectator and an adjudicator, and I would try as far as possible not to give the same person, the same tune. And in fact, it only happened in one occasion when the same person got the same, 2 people got the same reel. And that was because was it 3 reels that were put in? Yes, well, there was 2 common to this list and 2 common to this list, and these 2 had been played and these 2 had been played, and the 3rd one I didn't want them to play because it was too difficult, in my view, for the bagpipe at that particular stage. So therefore, I made the choice. But the answer to your question is yes, I try as far as possible not to have the same person playing the same march, because I don't think it makes for a good competition, and it certainly has no spectator value. And after all, you must have support of spectator.
General, on your going back to your final point of judging large cat plays, and you are respected whether it's bands or individually, this has happened quite often, so like you know, where you've got 2 bands coming up or playing the same tune, and the first band walking on a tempo of about 8 years of march, which is quite easy to get your fingers down, and the second band will play the same tune around about 110 or so, plays equally as well. Would you favour the one playing any stricter time?
That's a hypothesis that rarely happens. You rarely get a band playing at such a wide variation of speeds equally well. Again, on the other hand, it's a matter of opinion. Do you like a march played at that tempo, or do you like one played at this tempo? My personal opinion is that bands generally play marches faster and should play marches slightly faster than the individual. And therefore, I would tend to favour the faster the band that plays it more quickly, provided that's within certain prescribed limits, because one of the big dangers is the bands, they go like a bat out of hell, you know, they get started and they just won't stop, and they get faster and faster and faster. But your question is, my answer to your question is that I would tend to favour the band that gave it a bit of bounce and a bit of lift, rather than the more turgid.
Would you apply that same rule to individual piping, particularly with Strathspey and reels?
Oh, but of course, because Strathspey and reel playing is certainly the worst department of bagpipe playing anywhere in the world, be it individual or band. Particularly Strathspey playing. It's both difficult to play. Strathspeys are probably the most difficult aspect of light music to play, and certainly the most difficult to compose, and this is patently obvious in the number of top-class Strathspeys that have been composed since the First War. You can count them virtually on one hand. And the great thing is that if people could only get into their minds, and we're all guilty of it to a greater or lesser degree, that there should be a dancer in your mind in front. that is the person that you should be playing for. And this is the thing. So I would say yes.
Generosity and kindness towards the competitor extend beyond the point of being too lenient, because competitors tend to take their time and tend to do certain things which are unfair to the competition and the other competitors.
Well, I don't know if this is a politically loaded question or not. But I will make no bones about it. The adjudicator is there for two reasons. He is there to give an order of merit, and as I said already, he is there to encourage standards of piping. He is not, and he is manifestly not, there to administer and run a competition. You see, having been on both sides of the fence, it is very, very easy for the administrators to try and put the buck onto the judge, because the judge is not in direct contact with the piper. It's the administrator, especially the steward. And I've been on both sides of the fence, and I know the difficulties, because the professional competing piper is the most intolerant person in the world when he's actually going on to play. He has neither reason nor sense, and having been one for 25 years, I say this quite honestly, don't come near me. I am working with my... I mean, he's in a cocoon. And they say, you've got to accept this. I would think that what you have to do is what they do at Oban and Inverness. There isn't a problem. Once you do it once, everyone will hate you, they'll fall out with you, and they'll call you everything behind your back. But the next year they'll do it, and then it just becomes part and parcel. In other words, if there is a draw there, you go on in that order. When the man behind him, in front of him, is finished, he should be ready to go on. Now, if the man in front of him breaks down, hard luck. That is the luck of the draw. Now, usually in a case like that, the administrators and the adjudicator are sympathetic and they say, all right, take the amount of time that that man would have taken to finish his tune. In other words, don't rush on. And this, in fact, happened yesterday. That is perfectly acceptable. But I would say that as an organizer of a competition, that the competitor should be ready when called upon to play, and if he's not ready, that's too bad. And you've got to temper justice, you know, and mercy, but I would certainly say that the piper should be ready, and it's the duty of the chief steward to get him on the board at the time, even though he might fall out with him. He won't fall out with him for more than half an hour. I think the competitors prefer it in the long run, because in the only competitions at home where they absolutely insist on this, there is never any discussion or any problem, and everyone knows what's going to happen, and there's no bad feeling, none at all. But certainly I know my heart bleeds for the organisers of piping competitions, because very often they're doing work far beyond the call of duty in a pursuit, and they themselves are getting nothing out of it other than the sheer pleasure of doing something for piping, whereas the competitors are either getting a monetary reward or publicity or notoriety or infamy. Any of these things. But the organisers very often get none of these, they just get the brickbats.